Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day.
Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, brought to you by The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. I'm Chris Hayes, Washington editor of The Nation. Each week here on The Breakdown, we take your questions via Twitter at Chris L. Hayes or via email at TheBreakdown@TheNation.com. The way it works is this. You send us questions about what's perplexing you this week in Washington, and we try to break it down.
Will I run to the rock? Please hide me, I run to the rock. Please hide me, I run to the rock.
Hello and welcome back to The Breakdown, week 22, episode 22 in a collector series. This week's question comes from Jay Zarrow on Twitter, and he writes in to ask, to what extent is BP different from other oil companies? Did it just happen to be the one to screw up big, or is it unique? To answer that question, I have with me on the line Kurt Davies. Kurt Davies is a research director for Greenpeace, the environmental organization. He's been with Greenpeace for 8.5 years. He directed their global warming and energy campaign, and he has been going toe-to-toe with oil companies for quite some time. Kurt, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here.
So, Kurt, you heard the question. In the range of, you know, if you were grading on a curve amongst oil companies, where is BP rank amongst oil companies? Obviously, we'll get to oil companies writ large in a second, but amongst oil companies, where would you put BP?
In recent years, they're clearly the laggard. I mean, they've had blowouts on the North Slope in Alaska. They had the terrible Texas City refinery fire that killed people. They've had a series of a string of unfortunate events or negligence, depending on how you look at it. And I think it's clearly emerging that it's a lot of negligence.
Well, you talk about that Texas fire, because I think in some ways that's something that I've only been learning about now in the wake of the Deepwater Horizon catastrophe, but seems like was kind of a big deal, and I feel like didn't get a lot of national media attention.
Yeah, you know, these things happen, and it becomes a national story. You know how the news media is right now. It becomes a national story for a little bit, and then it's, that's a shame, but it's not in my neighborhood, and we're back to business as usual. So in March of 2005, there was a fire and an explosion at the Texas City refinery in Texas City, Texas. It killed 15 people, injured a lot of people, and there was a huge lawsuit, a settlement, et cetera. And the long and short of it was there were many OSHA claims against this plant and, you know, negligence, and workers said, yeah, they cut corners and cut capacity to update and take care of things. So, you know, it leans on another thread that's emerged, which is that the former CEO of BP, John Brown, cut corners and cut costs, and that some of that trickled down to regional managers and plant managers who were instructed to cut costs, and that meant cutting maintenance. Same thing on the North Slope when they had a series of blowouts of pipes that were not being maintained.
North Slope is in Alaska.
That's the far north Alaska oil field that feeds the Alaska pipeline that eventually filled up the Exxon Valdez in Valdez, Alaska. So this is the much disputed Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is to the east of Prudhoe Bay, which is the North Slope of Alaska, a giant pot of oil that's up there.
So one of the things that I've read about BP and what might make it a little different from, say, a company like Exxon is that my understanding is that BP is much more of a kind of almost kind of a way station for capital investments in oil extraction more than, say, Exxon, which actually owns a lot of the equipment. So my understanding is that BP does a lot more contracting out. It's basically a way of taking capital and then funneling it out to contract to other people. And I wonder if that corporate structure has a kind of downstream effect on safety.
Yeah, that's a very interesting line of inquiry. I think it's all one industry. And what's emerging here with the revelation that they were working with this company, Transocean, that owns hundreds of drilling rigs that they then contracted with Halliburton to plug the hole. There are contracts and subcontracts and partnerships that go on all the time in this industry that we don't even know about. In fact, there's a rig out farther than the Deepwater Horizon called Thunder Horse. People can look up easily on the web. It's jointly operated by BP and Exxon. Exxon only has a 25% stake in it, but it is deeper. It's 9,000 feet to the seafloor, and they think there's 1 billion barrels of oil down there, and it's producing right now at 100,000-ish a day. So there are partnerships that go on that the public never hears about, but these guys are all in cahoots, basically.
So that, I think, brings us to the second question here. I mean, it sounds like amongst oil companies, BP is a laggard. And yet, if we zoom out one notch to look at the industry as a whole, which, as you suggest, is a pretty kind of collusive, partnered, tangled set of interests. Yesterday, Ed Markey in the House, a congressman from Massachusetts, you know, he hammered the oil executives in a hearing for the fact that all of their safety plans essentially had been cribbed off each other. Rachel Maddow said it was like a paper you bought on the internet. So I guess it prompts the question, you know, how much of an outlier, even if BP is a laggard, you know, how implausible is it that this would have happened to someone else? Or is this kind of where the industry is at in terms of their recklessness?
Well, it gets to a sort of risk-benefit calculation that I'm sure they've all had internally, and they all know that going into deep water involves risk. I mean, these are basically like moon missions, right? These rigs don't have anchors. They're like floating spaceships a mile above the seafloor. They're operated with little, engines that keep them over the wellhead. And they're new. They're so new technology that clearly they're still breaking them and figuring out how to fix them and understanding them. It's novel. And this has only happened really in the past 10 or 15 years. The Clinton administration, we have to remember, opened up deep water drilling here in the U.S., which without royalties, they had a royalty relief act. The poor oil industry needed relief at that point because oil was so cheap. And that opened up a vanguard of development of this technology. So I think they probably all secretly have known that there was a lot of risk involved. In fact, some of the documents that have come out have shown that they all knew that a major blowout could shut down the whole deepwater project. Meanwhile, around the world, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of these wells at this depth and deeper that are going on in many different shorelines. And that's because that's where all the oil is now. And that's because we've tapped all the easily accessible oil. We now have to go to extreme depths and extreme regions of the earth, the Arctic, the Amazon, the middle of Africa, you know, crazy efforts to get to the remaining oil, the tar sands, you know, this ludicrous effort to, or not ludicrous, it's actually providing a lot of our gasoline right now, but insane environmentally, you know, boiling dirty sand to get this sludge out that we then refine into gasoline.
So do you think, I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is that it's kind of baked into the cake. It's an inherently risky enterprise that even with safety checks and, you know, even if MMS had been on the ball, even if BP had a more vigilant approach to safety, the enterprise itself of drilling at the level is sort of cutting edge enough and risky enough that we shouldn't be surprised that something blew up.
I think that's true. And, all of the oil companies, the oil CEOs took pains to say this would never happen to us or we should just wait until the investigation comes through and this is unfortunate. Tillerson was the most blunt. He said, when these things happen, we are not well equipped to deal with them. In other words, not if, but when. They all knew something like this was probably inevitable. In fact, there have been a couple blowouts recently, one north of Australia that was similar. So, you know, it's sort of a calculated risk. They know that the risk, what's it worth? If there's 100 billion barrels of oil under this Thunder Horse thing at, what, $60 a barrel, that's a lot of money.
Right.
And you have, so there's a lot at stake here. And this is why also you see the Obama administration already flinching on opening back up these wells and opening back up drilling out there because the oil companies are basically saying, you know what, we have a lot of stranded capital out here and we're not giving it away and there's a lot of profit at stake.
Well, I think that gives a good sense, if a somewhat dispiriting one, of where things stand. Kurt, I want to thank you so much for coming on The Breakdown.
Anytime, thanks.
The Breakdown is a weekly production of The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. New audio casts are posted each Friday at TheNation.com and available on iTunes. The Breakdown was produced by Eric Nang and yours truly. Senior producers of The Nation are Emily Douglas and Ben Wiskita. Comments and feedback should be sent to TheBreakdown@TheNation.com.
Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day.